98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, the 4 o'clock reset. 4 o'clock reset.
And here we go, the top stories of the day here on the Burns and Gambo show at 4 o'clock every single day. So you know, this is where you go to get caught up on everything going on in sports. We start the 4 o'clock reset with the very latest on Kyler Murray. He didn't practice today. He worked a little on the side, but then he met with the media after the Cardinals practice today, and he downplayed the injury to his shoulder that he suffered against the Seahawks.
Yeah, I feel good. Obviously getting banged up a little bit past couple weeks, but not today. I feel fine. I feel good.
Feel fine, feel good, and today just didn't practice out of precaution.
Yeah, just taking it day by day, obviously. I throw a lot throughout the day, so we're trying to, limit those throws and just, precautionary, take care of my shoulder.
Save his bullets, Gambo. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, get through the season and give yourself the best chance to win these games and get to the playoffs. And, at this point in the season, if you've played this many games, I think, coaches are smart. You tap it down a little bit. You bring it back. You don't throw as much. You give some off days here and there. You make sure you get your guys through the season healthy.
Yep, the Arizona Cardinals also made a bunch of roster moves today. That includes activating Zach Allen off of the IR and sending Deontay Thompson to the reserve COVID list. With Zach Allen, he is now designated to return to practice. Doesn't mean he'll play this week, but it opens up like a three-week window for them to kind of watch him practice at any time during the three-week window. He can return to game action, but it's not necessarily a guarantee he's back this weekend. As far as Deontay Thompson goes, Gambo, that leaves them potentially, if he's not able to return in time for Sunday's game, a little thin at the safety position with the injury to Jalen Thompson as well.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, just all over the place. You look how depleted they are in some of these areas. Like, man, you just want to get these guys back. If Allen comes back, that'll be big. And you obviously in the secondary, that's important. But there is no question. I mean, this defense is depleted. We haven't seen anything like this in a while, to be honest with you. With the injuries, the amount of injuries that they've had, it's been a lot of them.
According to John Wilner, Pac-12 insider from the San Jose Mercury News, there is still some real concern about ASU football and whether they're going to be able to play Sunday in their, and I did say Sunday, not Saturday, Sunday in their scheduled game against Utah. He tweeted out this morning, although the situation is fluid, he says Utah versus Washington this weekend might be more likely than Utah versus ASU. And in his words, all eyes on Tempe for a decision on a game that might come down, according to some reports today. Gambo, what have you heard about this?
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see if they end up playing. I've checked on this a couple of different times today just to see what the latest is. And the only thing I know is that they're day-to-day and they're just prepping. So that this is the last thing I heard was, and this was just a short time ago, that they are prepping for the game on Sunday. They are day-to-day, and the goal is to get players as many reps as they can for next year. So obviously they want to get out there and they want to play.
Yeah, Bruce Feldman tweeted out that the ASU staff is expecting / hoping to get word today on whether this weekend's Utah game is a go. Now, there's ASU basketball, and they're in Connecticut. They're getting ready for tomorrow night's season opener against Rhode Island. It was supposed to be Baylor. They were excluded from the tournament. Bobby Hurley spoke today on the Doug and Wolf show about why Baylor was excluded.
When you look at how the Big 12 is testing right now and how we're testing, it's different. So, we can't take that risk and put our student athletes in jeopardy potentially. So it basically came down to that.
Yeah, they were supposed to play Baylor. ASU chose not to play Baylor. Baylor was going to go to the tournament anyway. ASU was going to fly back east to play somebody somewhere at some point. But when they got there, Baylor had been, in essence, uninvited from the tournament so that ASU could play in it. They found Rhode Island at the last minute. That's who they'll open up their season against tomorrow. Very crazy stuff.
Yeah, and they're out there now and basically single file line to go eat and then right back to your room. They're not allowed to leave their rooms. They have to stay in their rooms. Jeez. So they're just waiting to get out of quarantine so they can practice and get this game in.
Crazy, crazy times. But our top story of the day today comes to us from inside the NFC West division. Here's Rams coach Sean McVay last night.
Great team win right there. I mean, really, all three phases came up in the clutch. It's a great football team. A lot of respect for Coach Arians and the Bucs. You can see why they've done what they've done up to this point. But I just love the way our guys stay together. Matt Gay coming through at the end. Jordan Fuller with the interception.
Yeah, Matt Gay with the game-winning field goal with about 2.5 minutes left to go in that game. Tom Brady threw a pick and it was over. Do we have to include the LA Rams now in a conversation about who the best team in the NFC is?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, because right now you can make the argument that they are the best team. And, you know, there's been several best teams. We've talked about it.
Yeah.
Green Bay, we thought was the best team. Then we thought it was Seattle. We thought New Orleans. We thought Tampa Bay. And, you know, now you might be able to make the argument that it's that it's the Rams, that the Rams may be the best team. They played a good game yesterday. They won. You know, we were looking at Tampa Bay winning that game and helping the Cardinals out a little bit in the standings. Didn't happen. The Rams won, and now the Rams, you look at them, and you know, they've got control of the NFC West and a chance to, you know, to win the division and maybe get home field playoffs.
Yeah, right now they are the number 2 seed in the NFC. As coincidence would have it, if the season ended today, the Cardinals would open up the playoffs against the division rival they have yet to play so far, the LA Rams. That would be the 2-7 matchup in the first weekend.
Play 3 times in 6 weeks.
Right.
Could play them 3 times in like a 6-week span.
And that's crazy to think about it that way. And what's even crazier is trying to figure out how exactly the Cardinals match up to the LA Rams. I mean, we know the history of McVay against the Cardinals. It's not good for the Cardinals. McVay's kind of had their number. But how this Cardinals team matches up to the Rams, we have no idea. It's the season's 2/3 of the way done. They haven't played each other yet. We don't know.
No, and that's the team I was kind of worried about, but mainly just the unknown. You know, that's what it comes down to with the Rams. When we talked about, you know, can you pencil the Cardinals in for one win in the two? I don't know. I mean, I'm not ready to say that. I don't know. The Rams, I mean, you look at what they did yesterday. Those two wide receivers, Cooper Kupp was outstanding. Robert Woods was great. Fourth teammate due in the last 70 years to have 11-plus receptions and 130-plus reception yards in the same game. Fourth teammate due in the last 70 years. Woods had 12 catches. Kupp had 11. They combined for 275 yards and a touchdown. They were really good. Goff was great. He beat the blitz every time. 16 out of 18 for 203 yards and 2 touchdowns versus the blitz. So you couldn't blitz him because he killed the blitz. So this is, you know, this is a team that I'm a little worried about. Now, when the Cardinals play him, maybe it's a different story. But right now, I'm a little worried about the Rams being the best team in this division.
Yeah, I'm a little worried about it too, just because I've been understating and underselling LA all year long. I didn't have high expectations coming into the year. Even when they got their 4 early wins, they were all against the NFC East. And obviously, while it might be competitive in the NFC East, it's not very good. But these back-to-back wins against Seattle and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, certainly two of the better teams in the NFC, no question, have got me singing a different tune about LA and really concerned about a matchup. Like you said, a couple of days ago, I spoke of splitting these two games against the Rams as if it were a given, as if it were just automatic that something like that was going to happen. Now, I'm not so sure, man. The Rams, that was the number 3 defense in terms of efficiency that Jared Goff did that to last night. And the Rams defense, they have not had one game so far this year, not one, where they've given up more than 400 yards of offense. They have been very, very good so far this season. And I think the questions about whether they're legit or not have been answered with how they've played these last two. I know they got a lot of easy early wins. I think those questions have been answered now. They're obviously very, very good.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, listen, we know they have a defense. We know they could rush the passer. There's, you know, I mean, you always look at, you know, what did you learn from these games? What do you learn from this week? What do you learn from those games? Look, Goff has been a guy that, you know, I know you've had your doubts about him and so have a lot of other people, but he was really good last night. We know how good Aaron Donald is. We know how good Jalen Ramsey is. That Jordan Fuller had a great game. They did a really good job of shutting down Brady in that offense for the most part. And, you know, we're just trying to learn about, you know, about the Rams. And I think, you know, when we see them play, and if they're going to play him twice at the end of the season, it very well could determine who's going to come out on top in the NFC West.
In 4 of their last 6 games, that Rams defense has given up 55 yards rushing or less in 4 of their last 6 games. That gives me a little bit of pause for the Cardinals, since obviously their whole game plan is predicated on running the football with the three-headed monster of Kyler and Kenyon and Chase Edmonds.
Yeah, and if Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods play that good offensively,
yep,
You know, they're going to put points on the board. They're going to get you 30 in these games. That's two really good weapons for Goff.
Kyler Murray says he is fully expecting to take the field on Sunday in New England, and that is very good news for Cardinal fans. But even if he does play, how much is the shoulder injury going to be in the back of his mind? We'll talk about it next on the Burns and Gambo Show. After what we saw Sunday, or Thursday, I should say, against the Seattle Seahawks, it was the number one question in the minds of Cardinals fans. Kyler Murray and his shoulder, and how was he going to be, and what was his status? We got in the report on Friday from, I think it was Ian Rappaport, that it was a sprained AC joint in his shoulder and that he should be okay. But, you know, you never know until you get him back on the practice field. We asked Cliff about it yesterday, Gambo. The word came down from Darren Urban today, who, of course, works for azcardinals.com. Quarterback Kyler Murray was rehabbing on the side, was not working during the open part of Cardinals practice, and yet Kyler addressed it today and said that his shoulder feels just fine.
Yeah, I feel good. Obviously getting banged up a little bit past couple weeks, but not today. I feel fine. I feel good.
And didn't practice today out of just precaution.
Yeah, just taking it day by day, obviously. You know, I throw a lot throughout the day, so we're trying to, you know, limit those throws and just, you know, precautionary, take care of my shoulder.
Good news, certainly, as it relates to Sunday's game against the Patriots.
Yeah, I was never concerned, right? I mean, he finished last week. He didn't come out of the game. I mean, he played. I mean, you could tell he was aggravated it a little bit, and you could see him wincing on the sidelines, but he played. He got through the game. They protected him as best, the best they could. Love that it's a mini bye. Love that he get a couple extra weeks, but I expect this. I mean, I expect that, you know, you're going to have players that are, you know, banged up on both sides of the ball as you get this deep into the season. And you know, Kyler took some punishment in that game. He took some hits, but he's good to go. And they've got to get him through. And I'm not saying you got to nurse him through these six games, but if you give him a day off here or there and you don't throw as much, and that's the stuff that you as a coach, you think about these things, okay? What gives me the best chance to get him through the season unscathed or as healthy as possible?
Right.
And some of that is, I'm going to give you a day off. We're not going to throw today. You know, I even think, man, if they could get ahead of some of these teams, they could get them the hell out of some of these games.
Yeah, maybe.
If they could just, we haven't seen that, right? But go blow somebody out and get him out of the game so he doesn't have to play the fourth quarter. Yeah. So all of these things you got to look at.
He was asked if he threw the ball at all today.
Yeah, just warming it up. Like I said, trying to limit those throws, but at the same time, make sure I'm ready.
Yeah, I think the question is, okay, to your point, he finished the game on Thursday, and I agree with you. There was never any doubt in my mind that he was going to play on Sunday against the Patriots. I guess the big question mark in my mind is, and still will continue to be until Sunday, how cautious will Cliff be with Kyler in the form of the plays that he calls, knowing that he's just one hit away from re-aggravating an injury that might limit his effectiveness for the rest of the game. You know, I mean, he acknowledged to us yesterday, Cliff did, that he called a very conservative game after Kyler got hurt against Seattle. Will he alter how he calls the game this Sunday against New England, knowing that Kyler might be one hit away from losing a whole bunch of his effectiveness in that game against New England? I don't know if we'll know that for sure until Sunday when the game starts.
Yeah, and I expect that, you know, we haven't heard anything differently. But I think that you need Kyler to be Kyler to win these football games. I don't think Kyler being, you know, the I'm going to sit back and I'm not going to run, Kyler is going to help you win. You'll be okay, but you're not a threat to beat everybody you play. You're not a threat to win the division. I don't think you're a threat to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
We'll go deep in the playoffs if Kyler is going to be, you know, a guy that, hey, listen, I'm banged up. I can't run. Okay, well, that's, you know, you're taking away, you know, one of his superpowers.
Right.
You know, I know you love those superhero things, but you take away one of his superpowers and he's limited. I mean, that is a superpower for him. His ability to go run for, you know, 8 or 9 times for 60 yards and a touchdown, it decimates these defenses.
Yeah, it's I wasn't even thinking about it like a superhero. I was thinking about it like Kyler not running the football, man, it's like a chocolate chip cookie without the chocolate chips. I mean, and it's just a cookie, right? It's just a plain, and that's fine. I mean, a cookie is still a cookie at the end of the day. But if I want a chocolate chip cookie, you know, it's like you give me a cookie, it's got no chocolate chips in it. And that to me is Kyler – not running the football is that not-so-secret ingredient that makes the Cardinals potentially special in 2020. And I just don't know what Kliff could do. I know he's a brilliant play caller and all of that, but what could Kliff do to make up for the fact that your player around which this whole thing is centered can't do the one thing that makes him the most unique talent in the NFL? I just don't know how you'd even try to start to game plan a strategy against the Patriots without the ability of Kyler Murray to do what he does. I don't even know where you'd start.
Yeah, you would, you would probably have to have a game plan in which you'd swing a lot of passes out to the running backs and let them, you know, you're going to run the ball, but to help teams from having to, you know, to stop the run, you're probably talking a lot about a lot of screens and swing passes and things like that to loosen up that defense a little bit, because you still have to be able to run with Drake and Chase.
Yeah,
it's been a key part of what's made them successful this year.
I'm laughing because Jordan in my headset just said wide receiver screens. Yay! And he was being very sarcastic.
That's something every Cardinal fan loves right now.
Oh, yeah, wide receiver screens. Woohoo! We love those around here.
Yeah, but you know what? I mean, if Kyler's not going to run, look, I fully expect he's going to be back to running.
I think that's what he does. I think so, too.
And you could do it with him because he's smart. The kid goes – he gets down. He gets out of bounds. I mean, even if he's a little banged up, okay. I mean, you know, that game against Seattle, they took the precautions because he got hit in the game, and they didn't want him to get hit anymore. But I think, you know, he knows. You see it all the time. 90% of the time, he's super smart, and he gets down and gets out of bounds. And on the rare occasion, he tries to get the extra yard or two, he may get popped.
Yeah. It's just, you know, and I just thought of this just now. I guess what makes the whole conversation about to run or not to run and the conclusion that he has to run so interesting is that we've spent the entire season, we've spent his entire career praising him for being smart about his running, about knowing when he needs to get down, about avoiding those big hits. And isn't it kind of interesting or scary that in the last few weeks, we've seen him take some real punishment? He took some punishment against Seattle. He took some punishment against Miami, right? We've seen the quarterback who's been so good at avoiding those hits like that, and he's taken his fair share the last couple, whether it was that knock he took in the helmet against the Miami Dolphins or all the pounding he took against Seattle. And maybe it just speaks to this idea that if you have a quarterback who's going to run it that much, no matter how good he is at avoiding it, sometimes it is simply unavoidable that your quarterback is going to get popped.
I don't think we could ever just think that he's not going to get hit.
Right.
The thing is, you want to limit it to one or two. You know, we've always said about the sacks, oh, he sees the sacks coming, you know, and that's been a great thing with the offensive line. You see the sacks coming. But you can't go in, he's never going to get popped. You don't want it to be, last week was the most times he's ever had quarterback hits, right? That was the most quarterback
hits? Seven quarterback hits in a game. He's never been hit that much in a single game in the NFL.
Okay, so you've got to limit that. I mean, you just got to limit it. You got to limit that and the damage that comes with those hits and not have him get hit seven times in a game.
Yeah. There's no question the Phoenix Suns have improved their roster over the last week or so. What could that improvement mean for their standings within the Western Conference? Well, like a lot of things, it depends on who you ask. That's coming up next on the Burns and Gambo Show. All right, we've got two poll questions today to get everybody updated on, including one that was inspired from a conversation we all had about pie at the start of the show. Let's actually start with that poll question, because the second one will lead us right into our conversation about the Suns. Sarah, what you got for us?
Burns and Gambo need to know Twitter poll update, presented by Sanderson Ford.
You know, I just love how hard-hitting we sound. Sarah's got a question for us about pie.
You want hard-hitting? I mean, if that's what you want.
I don't know what I want.
Our friends right down the hall at KTAR News 92.3, man, they'll hit you as hard as you want, all right? That's not our gig here. That's not what we do.
I guess that's fair.
We're not about the hard-hitting here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. Yes, our question is about pie, Sarah.
Yes, so we were talking a whole lot about pie, of course, with Thanksgiving being this week. So we were asking, what do you prefer? Is it cake or is it pie? All four of us voted for pie.
Pie.
Yes.
And so did our listeners. 54% of them say they take pie over cake.
Okay,
for them.
Just real quick. around the horn. Gambo, is it banana cream? Is that your favorite pie?
Yeah, I probably go. And I like anything with coconut in it, too, to be honest with you.
Okay.
But like the regular old fashioned pies, cherry.
Good old
cherry pie
old
with sauce. A little vanilla ice cream on top.
Uh-huh.
Forget it. Forget about it.
Forget about it. Sarah, your favorite pie?
Pumpkin.
Jordan?
Really?
Dutch apple.
Dutch apple?
Cherry.
Not.
I thought it was your wife's concoction.
You asked this question, Bernsey. And
many,
now you act like it's
so many, like,
you can't answer it. It's a hard-hitting question.
I'm going to answer it with banana cream. I love a good banana cream pie. Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely. That's my favorite pie. All right, so now that we've gotten that hard-hitting stuff out of the way, we can talk about expectations for the Phoenix Suns.
That is correct. So we are asking, with expectations higher than usual for the Phoenix Suns this season, I am asking, what do the Suns need to do to meet your expectations for the 2020-2021 season? Here are the four options. The Suns need to reach the play-in tournament, which will take place in May next year. They need to make the playoffs, but not through the play-in tournament. They just need to be seeded better than the play-in tournament. They need to win a playoff series or other. Fill in the blank.
They need to make the playoffs and not rely on the play-in tournament to do it.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. That's what I think.
Okay, that was a popular one, but with 57% of the vote, it is win a playoff round.
Wow.
That's what the Suns need to do to meet expectations. They are definitely high. 36% say get a playoff seed, but not via the play-in tournament. 7% voted for just reach the play-in tourney. 1% said other.
All right, you can find the poll question on the Burns and Gambo Twitter page. We'll talk about expectations in a minute. First, Gambo, the heavy lifting when it comes to this, right? It's pretty much done, right, when it comes to the Suns roster?
I believe it is done. I think they're done making moves. They'll have the one open roster spot. They will. It's kind of like picking up the option on Abdallah Nader. They're gonna his contract guarantees on the 28th for $1.8 million. They're gonna guarantee that. That's the plan, is to keep him. There has been some discussion. People thought that maybe they weren't. But, yeah, the plan is to keep him. They do have the biannual left, but I don't expect that they're going to use it. I think they're going to save it because, remember, you can't use it 2 years in a row. So if they used it this year, they wouldn't have it available next year. They like their roster the way it is. I mean, things could change, but right now they feel pretty confident that this is the team that they're going to go to battle with.
Pretty impressive. They were able to get Etuan Moore and Langston Galloway on veteran minimum contracts, you know, without having to use that biannual exception. That is, I was not expecting to see something like that. And I get it. It's a funky market coming off of, you know, the COVID season and the bubble and things like that and the uncertainty going forward. A lot of guys taking one-year deals to kind of reestablish value. But I am surprised both of those guys came in at just the veterans minimum. I would have thought one of them would have required a little bit more money than that, but very surprising.
You know, things fall through the cracks, and that's why you got to be patient and you got to wait. And you know, it's, you're hoping that the cultures change where guys want to play. Hey, I want to play with Chris Paul. I want to play with Buck. I want to play with that practice facility. They went 8-0 in the bubble. And, you know, not everybody has money. You know, next year a lot of teams are going to have money. But this year not everybody has money. So for these, a lot of these players that, some of the players they signed, you know, Moore and Galloway on the veterans minimum deal, it's like there wasn't anything out there for them. I think if they could have got more money, they would have got more money.
Yeah.
I think if their agents could have convinced the Suns, hey, give me the biannual of 3 point, what is it, 6, I'll take that. But the Suns held steady. They got him on vet minimum deals, and that was important to them because they wanted to make sure that they held on to that biannual so they could use it next year or for a player that may get bought out later this season.
So going back to the question that Sarah asked, the poll question, here's where things get kind of tricky when it comes to the Suns. There's no question they're a better basketball team. I mean, zero debate. They are better. The question is, in deciding where they should slot in the West, you got to remember that everybody else got better too, or at least a lot of other teams got better too. So trying to figure out where the Suns' new place is in the new Western Conference, given what Utah did, given what Portland did. I know Oklahoma City's going to take a step back. I think Houston's going to take a step back because their two stars don't want to be there anymore. Trying to figure out their place relative to the other teams that got better in the Western Conference, that's the real tricky part in trying to figure out where we should expect the Suns to finish when the season is done.
you know, Golden State's a question mark. Klay Thompson's out for the year. They picked up Kelly Oubre. Klay, Steph has said some things about how they're still going to be good. Question mark. Don't know. I mean, just don't know if that combination of Steph and Draymond and Kelly Oubre is better than what the Suns have. Houston, haven't traded anybody yet. So are they going to, you know, are they going to trade them midseason? Right. Or is that team not going to play hard because those guys don't want to be there? So we have to, you know, keep our eye on Houston. Oklahoma City will take a step back, of course. New Orleans, trading Drew Holiday, will take a step back a little bit. Utah and Portland, those are teams that, you know, now you put the Suns in that mix. Yeah, they're as good as those teams. Are they better? We'll see.
Yeah.
Got to play it out. Those are good basketball teams. You know, so I think you got to play that out to see if they're, you know, in line with how good those teams are.
That's exact. You know what? It's funny. Those are the two teams. And part of this is based off of a story that you sent me this morning. Which West team has the potential to go in a surprising direction based on the offseason so far? A lot of the NBA writers for ESPN, some of them mentioned the Suns. A couple of them mentioned the Portland Trailblazers. One of them meant the Utah Jazz. And I think those three teams... Maybe a fourth in Dallas, although maybe they've separated. I think a lot depends on the Porzingis injury and how quickly they're able to get him back from being hurt. But I think the question for the Suns and where they fit in the West really depends on who you think is better, the Portland Trailblazers, the Utah Jazz, or the Phoenix Suns. Those three teams kind of seem to be lumped together, and separating them, and maybe Dallas in there too as a fourth team. That's kind of the group, I think, if you're a Suns fan, you have to watch to see who is better than who. I think after that, there's a drop-off, okay? After those top seven teams, now you're getting into Golden State, now you're getting into New Orleans, now you're getting into the Rockets or Memphis or things like that. I think it's slots 4, 5, 6, and 7 where it's very difficult to differentiate between who's better and who's not at this stage.
Yeah, because the Clippers and the Lakers, you know, are better. Denver, you believe Denver's better, right? I do.
Yeah, like answer the question for me this way. How many teams in the West do you know for sure, are better than the Phoenix Suns?
The Lakers.
Okay.
The Clippers.
Okay.
The Nuggets.
Mm-hmm. I mean, for sure. Mortgage payment
Lakers,
for sure.
The Clippers, the Nuggets. I think the Suns are now on par with Portland, Dallas, and Utah,
okay.
Like you've said. Now, Utah's really good. So that, I mean, that's a big jump to get to where they are. You know, that is a good jump, but that's a good basketball team. But I think that I think you're in line. I think you have three or four teams that will, like if you look at last year, okay, you look at the standings last year. Houston, Oklahoma City, and the Jazz all finished with basically the same record. Three teams finished with the same record. And the Mavericks were 2.5 games behind them. So four teams within 2.5 games of each other. If you had Denver, it's five teams within 3.5 games of each other. Look, it's going to be bottled up. I mean, there's not going to be any clear separation with 5, 6, 7. I mean, it's probably going to be pretty close.
Yeah, yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking too. I think there are three teams that I am mortgage payment sure are better than the Phoenix Suns. After that, because Utah's already there, right? Portland for the most part is already there. They were so hurt last year they had to kind of come on late in the bubble. The Suns, I don't know what the Suns did, how it relates to Utah. Utah's a really good basketball team, but based off of what they've done, I think you can make the argument that the Phoenix Suns are better than the Utah Jazz just based off of the roster, comparing side by side one roster to the other. And I think a lot of it, too, depends on DeAndre Ayton. You know, he's a very good player. How much better of a player this year is DeAndre Ayton in year three? Because that might dictate whether the Suns are the fourth best team in the West, the fifth best team, the sixth best team, or the seventh best team. That might be kind of the deciding factor, because if he's that good, they become a three-headed monster in the West, and I don't know if anybody else can do that outside of the Lakers or the Clippers or the Nuggets.
Yeah. Listen, I like the Jazz, but you know, Conley's done. Like, he can't play anymore.
Yeah.
But I like that Joe Ingles, man. He can play. Like, he could play. He could score. So, but they're, you know, they're, they've got the two really great players in Donovan and Rudy. That they're really good with those two guys. But yeah, maybe. I mean, maybe you're right. Maybe the Suns are able to pass the Jazz or Portland and you know, move ahead of those teams. I think it's going to really come down to making sure that you beat the teams that you're supposed to beat and not lose those games.
Yeah. When we come back, ASU basketball, they're on the verge of beginning a season that could be a very special one for Bobby Hurley and his team. The Sun Devil football program, they're just trying to figure out when they're going to play their next game. We'll give you an update on both coming up on the Burns and Gambo show.
Arizona sports, breaking news.
And in almost perfect timing in a very imperfect world, quote, after consultation with Arizona State University, the Pac-12 Conference announced the game involving Utah at Arizona State, scheduled for Sunday, will not be played.
Wow.
This decision was made under the Pac-12's football policy due to ASU not having the minimum number of scholarship players available for the game as a result of return-to-play protocols involving local public health prescribed
started quarantines. Too late. They started too late. A lot of these other teams have 7-8 games in before the virus came back, and they started too late. Yep. It's not because of positive tests. I just spoke with ASU as we were going through the break. It's not because of positive tests. It's because of the CDC quarantines and cardiac testing results. That's what it is. I'm trying to, you know, get more details, but this is what I can tell you as I'm speaking with ASU now. It is not because of positive tests. Is because of CDC quarantines and cardiac testing results.
Yeah, so it's guys who have been around those who have tested positive, and it's the heart tests that are part of the return to play protocols. Here's Vice President for Athletics Ray Anderson in a statement that ASU just released. Quote, we had to invoke the Pac-12's football game cancellation policy for this week's game versus Utah due to not having the minimum number of scholarship players on account of return-to-play protocols involving CDC-prescribed quarantines by virtue of contact tracing and cardiac testing evaluation results. Like Gambo just said, the timing of the previously reported positive results coupled with the return-to-play guidelines have stretched over the parts of 3 weeks, which makes it unsafe for several of our players to compete this Sunday. I sympathize for our student athletes and everyone associated with Sun Devil Athletics as well as Sun Devil Nation. This also has an impact on the University of Utah football program. We extend our appreciation for their understanding.
Cancel.
Of the situation.
Done. Just no, I wouldn't. That's it. If I may issue, we're done.
Because we're talking three games now. They would have two games left, right?
It's over. Forget it. I don't want guys getting injured either because they can't play for 3 weeks and all of a sudden now you got to go play a game. Forget it. I mean, I'm being honest here. I mean, I wanted them to play. They started too late. They started too damn late. They did. They started too. If they would have started when everybody else is, they would have. Not enough players would have been cleared by Sunday to play.
Yeah.
They knew it would be close, but it became apparent today they would not make it. So no new positive tests. They've got no new positive tests.
Sure.
But they can't play a football game.
They can't play a football game because of the
nobody's positive. Nobody. No new positive tests. But they can't play a football game. This is a joke. It's always been a joke. Okay? I wanted them to play. I didn't know that the guidelines would be this strict. I mean, I really didn't know that the guidelines would be this strict. But they are. Each player who tests positive nationally has to get cardiac test and pass to return, plus be negative. So not only do you have to have a negative test, you have to pass a cardiac test to return. They don't have enough play. I'm getting this information as we speak. Cardiac test results, enough players would not be cleared by Sunday to play. They knew it would be close, but it became apparent today they would not make it. Each player who tests positive nationally has to get cardiac test and pass to return plus negatives. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if you agree with me or not. Is there a reason to play any more games?
I'm really thinking about that. I don't know. I mean, because there is a real risk of injury now, right? I mean, you've basically had to shut the program down for the better part of the last 3 weeks. You would have, what, two games left on the schedule? Is it worth it to even – I guess three if you count the game that they would have played on the weekend of the Pac-12 championship. Is it worth it to play just three football games? I mean, look, I'll tell you this. The conference makes $5 million every time there's a Pac-12 game. It might be worth it financially to the conference. As you've said many, many times, and it's the truth, one of the big motivators in having all of this happen is money. And so is there money to be made by the university? Is there money to be made by the conference? But at what cost? Right. And is it worth it? Is it worth the cost in terms of not human life, obviously. I don't want to be melodramatic, but in terms of the health of your players, the welfare of their players, I don't know if it's worth the cost. Right. And you
played.
You open yourself up to more and more injuries. I don't know. Gambo, I don't know if it's worth it for them to even continue. We're talking specifically about ASU now. The rest of the conference, those who are able, are going to keep playing as much as they possibly can. But given that they've had half of their six-game season now wiped out, I don't know if it's worth it. I don't know if there's any reason to keep doing this if you're ASU other than money, and I don't know if that's a good enough reason.
Burnsy, three games in a row have been canceled.
I know.
Three in a row now. I mean, the season ends in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Like, the season ends in 2 weeks.
December 19th, it's done. Yeah.
You got the two games, and then you'd have the one add-in game.
Yeah.
During the championship week.
The game they would play during championship week. I mean, you know, is a game against your rival U of A, I mean, that's one of the ones that you'd be sacrificing. I mean, does that still have value to ASU fans?
I don't know. The Apple Cup's not being played.
I know.
They're very concerned about that because it's been, 118 years that they played, and they've only missed it the one time, but then they went back and they played it 2 years the next year, and that was during World War II with the Apple Cup when they missed it 1 year. But then they played the next year, they played two games, I believe.
And I'm not answering that question. I'm just asking it. I don't know. If you're a fan of ASU, do you even want your team to continue to play at this point, given that you've only got two games left, or is...
I'm a fan of ASU. No, I don't.
Okay.
I don't want
because one of those games is a game against the rival, and that might influence some fans thinking about this.
But you got to understand, it's a fraud. This whole season's a fraud.
Of course.
It's not real. It's a joke. They're not doing it for the right reasons. Nobody's playing for the right reasons. They're playing for money.
Of course.
Not playing for the right reasons.
Yeah.
It's about money.
We're going to get at the top of this hour. In fact, I'm looking up at the monitor right now. The first college football playoff rankings are going to be released. Yeah. And Gambo, you know I'm with you on this one. You know I've said to you many, many times how hard it has been to get into college football this year. In fact, I haven't gotten into college football. And I think part of the reason is exactly what you just said a second ago. It just doesn't feel real. It doesn't. Baseball felt real. The bubble in the NBA and the NHL felt real. This NFL season feels real. This college football season, it just doesn't. I mean, Minnesota, Wisconsin, that got canceled today. That's a huge rivalry. And it might cost Wisconsin the chance to even compete for the Big Ten West title. They would not have been able to play the minimum number of games required to even qualify themselves for that title. Their season is probably done as we know it. It just doesn't feel real in college football. None of it does. None of it has.
Nope.
You know, not at
nope.
all.
I think if I'm the powers that be at ASU, I've got to really sit down with everybody and say, look, I mean, what is the benefit of playing? What is the benefit of really got a 3-game season? I mean, and when was the last time you practiced? And are we risking anybody getting hurt because we haven't practiced in so long?
Right. No word from the Pac-12. About whether there is...
He started too late. Larry Scott screwed up.
No word on whether the Pac-12 is going to replace this game, give Utah somebody else to play. Utah versus Washington. John Wilner just tweeted out, Utah versus Washington makes an awful lot of sense right now, given that both are available. We'll see what happens there. And then, of course, there's college basketball, Gambo, and I kind of have a feeling we're headed down exactly the same road for college basketball. They're trying to start their season in the middle of all of this. I don't know how they're going to pull that off. We're seeing cancellations left and right in college basketball. It is going to be, we always knew college sports was going to have the toughest road, and that is being revealed big time over these last few weeks. Big time.
I want to see what, this is an ASU decision right now. This isn't about what's best for the Pac-12. This is about what's best for ASU. And you've missed three games in a row. And everybody knows this season is a joke of a season. ASU's going to have a hell of a team for next year, and I can't wait to watch them play. And they should have beat USC in that week one. They're so talented, and they're going to be so good next year, and I cannot wait to see them play. I really think they're going to be great next year. And I would have loved to have seen them get some experience in. But at this point, I do worry about the risk factor that you haven't played in. You know, you're not going to have played in like 3 weeks, and all of a sudden you're going to run a bunch of kids out there to play. Is there – is it – Is there a risk factor that guys could get injured? I think you got to consider that. And again, I mean, what are you playing for? I mean, what are you playing for?
Now, I just want to pass this along as a programming note. Tonight is the All Aboard show, and we just checked. As of right now, Herm Edwards is still scheduled to be a guest on the All Aboard show for ASU. It starts at 7 o'clock here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Let me throw in one more thing here.
Okay.
And I'm looking this up, right? The last full practice that ASU had was the Wednesday of the Cal game. So that game was supposed to be November 14th. So that Wednesday was the 11th.
So Veterans Day.
Bernsie, they haven't, yeah, so this is two straight weeks that they haven't practiced.
Yeah. Yeah.
Two straight weeks, no practices.
When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, the start to his NFL career has not gone quite as he's planned. But now that Isaiah Simmons is coming off what is clearly his best professional performance, has the Cardinals' first-round pick officially found his groove and turned that corner? That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo show.